And I took one of my colleagues, Victoria Spartz, in a skiff. I said, there's a document nobody's looking at. We need to go read. And so we go in the skiff. It was a letter from Senator Ron Wyden. And I don't know how he has the senators, particularly those on the Intelligence Committee, they get access to things. When a bill says that they have to notify Congress of something, what they really mean is they have to notify the Intelligence Committee. And then the Intelligence Committee just doesn't say anything, or they don't even bother to look at it. And so Ron Wyden in the Senate, he's a Democrat. He's on the Intelligence Committee over there. He discovered an innovative loophole they're using to spy on Americans in a way I can't even tell you here, because the FBI's interpretation of the law is top secret. Okay, literally, there's a red and white cover on top of Ron Wyden's letter that says top secret. And Victoria Spartz and I went in there, and we read it. Very troubling. It's an interpretation, a secret interpretation of the FISA law. And I can't even tell you how they're interpreting. Now, when you have secret laws, that's when you know your country has gone too far.
Yeah.
How do you know you're not breaking secret laws? How do you know what your government's doing? Anyways, I show Victoria Spartz this document, and we look at it, and she said, well, there's something even worse over in this other skiff across the hallway that you need to see. So we already had our phones locked up. The debt badge was locked up in a little locker. I said, all right, well, I'll go across the hall and see your other document. It's an opinion from the FISC, which is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And these are the folks that – it's a court in the sense that there are judges, but they're on loan from the federal courts, and it's a separate court. And there's no adversarial presentation of the fact in a FISA court. I think there should be. I think there should be at least an amici and a friend of liberty in that courtroom. That's one of the amendments to the FISA reauthorization that we've suggested. Anyways, the FISA court has said, and there's a 100-plus page documented over there. By the way, when Victoria Spartz got it, I heard some of my colleagues saying, well, the one I saw was only 50 pages. When Victoria got it, she got to the page 50 and realized there were more pages that were missing. So she said, why does this paragraph end here? There's no, where's the conclusion? Where's the end of this? And they went and found like 50 more pages to show her. So anyways, when I went over there, I got to see the entire.
I'm sure it was an accidental
106 pages. Yeah. And it's another secret interpretation of the law that the FBI is using in a novel way that allows them, I believe, to underreport abuses of the FISA program. So if you hear in the news that, oh, under Biden, you know, we had 5,000 abuses of FISA by the FBI, self-reported, blah, blah, blah. And under Trump, we've only got 100. And so we don't need to reform this program. Well, if you go in the skiff and read the top secret documents, opinions of the FISA court judges, it says, well, here's what they're doing that allows them to do things that your law prevents them, should prevent them from doing. Okay, so now I've read two top secret documents in the skiff, and it's really helpful. I tell you that I was in there with Representative Victoria Spartz, because when you go in a skiff, you leave your smartphone outside and your staff can't be in there. So it really is, you might think like a stupid congressman, it's just voting and getting elected and raising money and working for Team Red or Team Blue. So you don't really have to have a very good IQ to do this job. The reality is when you go in a skiff, that's all you've got. You don't have a smartphone, so you can't be smart.
So that's Thomas Massie talking about going into skiffs and realizing that we have secret laws, secret processes by which the American government can spy on the American people. And to me, the big takeaway is that none of that access to all of our information will ever be used to stop actual criminals. It'll never be used to make us safer, even though it could. It's all just used to crush our spirit. That's it.
If you suffer from low energy, if you're not feeling the energy that you used to feel in your younger years, you should try this product and see if it makes a difference for you, because there are many causes of lack of energy, but one of them can be a lack of cellular energy support through pre-methylated nutritional supplements like this that can help you. You can go buy a bottle of vitamins at any store, you know, any Walmart, anywhere that's got cheap B12, which is cyanocobalamin, or the cheap B vitamins, or the cheap minerals like calcium carbonate, which is ground up limestone, you know. Alex Jones doesn't use the cheap low-end versions of these products. And I know this as a nutritionist, as a food scientist. I look at Alex's labels and I'm like, yes, these are the high-end ingredients that I would be using in my own formulations. So really, I'm always impressed with what the Alex Jones store is doing with their product line. So check it out. TheAlexJonesStore.com, Ultra Methylene Red.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. The War Room with Harrison Smith is live right now on X and Band.video worldwide.
Welcome back, folks. In this final hour of today's broadcast, I want to talk about crime in America, as well as the Iran war. And if we can, I want to touch a little bit on Europe and free speech overall. But we just heard Thomas Massie talk about the fact that we have secret courts, secret laws, secret processes by which the American people can be spied on endlessly. And just another reminder that just like AI scanning of social media, it's never going to be used to actually defend the American people. It's never going to be used to benefit us in any way. Our lives are never going to get better as a consequence of the government being able to spy on us more. Now, if you say it's necessary for national security, I'd say the much more effective thing to do about national security would be to deport all of the foreigners that we have here. That seems to be a major issue. And we could go into all of this, but just the number of ways that we are being spied on, the number of ways that they have to monitor us every second of the day, and yet it's never, ever, ever used to stop criminals, rapists, murderers, scam artists, and fraudsters. So why are they doing it? I mean, you tell me what goes through your mind when you hear that the American government has done something like set up flock cameras to where there is a live, you know, visual of every inch on the American continent. Like, you tell me what goes through your mind when you learn that the American government has the ability to spy on everybody constantly, and yet crime never goes down after this has been implemented. And it's never being used to actually, in fact, if it turns out these programs help fight crime, they get rid of them. Like the shot spotter in Chicago. That was like the least intrusive thing you could imagine. That was just microphones that could detect and triangulate gunfire. But they removed it and, you know, stopped using those because it kept identifying gunfire in black communities from black shooters. So they got rid of it because it was racist. Because the microphones were racist when they were hearing gunfire in black communities and not in white communities. That's because the cameras were racist. Okay. So just really get that through your mind that, like, all of this power, all of these authorities, all of the ability to surveil us endlessly down to like monitoring our chats before we even hit send, which is one of the things they're doing in the EU right now, it will never be used to protect you. It will never be used to stop crime. It will never be used to improve your life in any way, which would really make you wonder why they're building 3,000 new data centers all over the country when they require more energy production than your average big city, when they require more fresh water than all the people in the state combined. Why would we be dedicating that many resources, and why would we be rewriting laws to allow for the access of that information by the government? Is any of it for the American people? Can anybody make an argument for me how we benefit at all from data centers, let alone benefit to the extent that it justifies an outlay of trillions of dollars, billions of gallons of fresh water, millions of acres of farmland, and more energy production than all of our cities combined. What are we getting in exchange for that? Is our Netflix going to get served to us a little bit faster? Are we going to be able to, you know, generate images of women in bikinis twice as fast, and that's worth it somehow? It's the infrastructure of our enslavement. It's the only reason it's being built. It's the only possible reason it would be built. And it's one of these things where has nobody asked this question? Because as far as I can tell, nobody's asked this question and nobody's answered this question. It's just one of these things where they just go, you know what? We need a full-fledged like societal reorganization to build these data centers. And we've got to build power plants to power the data centers. And we've got to build desalination plants to get fresh water to cool the data centers. And we need new laws to make sure the data centers can be accessed by the... And nobody once has said, wait, why though? But wait, for what and to what end and for what purpose? But why though? Oh no, we just got to do it. I mean, we got to do it. The money's there. We got to expand. We got to build this stuff. Okay, but how is it going to benefit the American people? And it's not. It's going to enslave the American people. It's the only thing that they can be used for. Again, am I wrong? Am I missing something here? So all this goes along together, right? There's a reason that they're trying to pass these FISA laws and trying to, you know, get all these other, you know, Palantir is being looped into just about everything. The latest is now, I guess, Palantir is going to be in charge of FAA flight, you know, designations or whatever. So that's the operating system for the New World Order, and they're building these data centers to power the surveillance that'll be used to enslave you. It's really not that complicated. And again, nobody can tell me why we need all these data centers. Nobody can tell me what the pitch is. Because the American people don't want it, but they're just doing it anyway. But why, though? So let's go to clip, whatever I told you there, 24. This is Lauren Boebert talking about the flock cameras that blanket our entire country and yet are never used to find a single, you know, unregistered gun in the ghetto. It's never used to find a kidnapped child. It's never used for any of that stuff, ever. It's only ever going to be used to surveil law-abiding citizens when they jaywalk to lower their social credit score. Right? The classic comparison is Randy Weaver in the woods in Idaho being hunted down by the FBI because they convinced him to saw off a shotgun barrel an inch or two, and they just like burn his family to death and just like kill everybody. Meanwhile, I can show you 10,000 videos today of mobs of young black kids in inner city America just showing off their myriad illegal guns, just automatic fire and clips on the Glocks and extended magazines that have been illegal for decades. It's like nobody ever goes after them. You'll never see the FBI surrounding their house and moving in and murdering their children. Obviously not. Not that we'd want that to, but like clearly there's a bit of a inconsistency here. And so all of this surveillance, all of this control that they're building, it's all going to be used in exactly the same way. It's all going to be for our detriment. And it's insane to me that people don't realize this when we're building literally 3,000 data centers that literally take more resources than the rest of the country combined. And they haven't even tried to explain to us why this would be something that we should be doing. There's no answer. Because it's for your enslavement, and that's all. Go to clip 24 now.
They're scanning our faces in public places, at protests, even at our children's schools. The government is building secret databases they can go through anytime that they feel like it. They're blanketing our neighborhoods with flock cameras. And every single one of you should be saying, what the flock? I mean, this is an absolute egregious reach on our Fourth Amendment rights. They're creating a digital footprint of your entire life without a single warrant or even probable cause. Your morning commute to work It's tracked. Dropping off your kids at their soccer practice, that's logged. Visiting a church or a gun range, recorded forever in a government accessible database.
Okay, so we have flock cameras everywhere. We have giant data centers accessible at all times by the federal government. We have the federal government contracting with private companies who have access to that information. So even if they would need a warrant otherwise, they have portals in the back end of these organizations to get that access to that information without ever having to go through a court of law. And that's all just the, you know, flock system surveillance cameras in that regard. You, of course, have NSA and the FBI sweeping up private emails and phone calls to a criminal degree. Let's go to clip number 15 here. This is a former NASA counsel, Glenn Gerstel, on Fox News. Let's watch.
The concern is that because although the statute is aimed at, say, let's just say foreign terrorists, just to take one example, overseas terrorists, maybe some of them, some percentage of them might be in communication with Americans. That could be for perfectly benign reasons, such as they're talking to their relatives in the United States or who knows what else. Or it could be for malevolent purposes. They're trying to recruit someone. It could be China trying to recruit a spy, a terrorist trying to recruit someone to help him plant a bomb in the United States. And so inevitably, there'll be some communications, presumably small, but some percentage of those foreign targets. And by the way, there were about 300,000 last year, 300,000 foreign targets, foreigners targeted under this program. Some percentage of them will probably be talking to Americans. And that communication, the other end of that communication, is going to be picked up inevitably. It's a byproduct of doing surveillance, whether it's an email or a telephone call. And that's where the problem begins from the point of view of the privacy advocates, which is they say the government then has the ability later on to look through its database and look at Americans' communications that were inadvertently or incidentally caught up, even though they weren't the targets, caught up in this surveillance program. That's the essence of the problem.
Of course, we've seen this weaponized against Donald Trump in the last 10 years. So again, to act like this wouldn't be abused, it already has, and it is being abused. But here we've just covered two sort of aspects of the surveillance spy state control apparatus, the flock cameras, the surveillance that's occurring constantly everywhere. Ring camera, I would put into that as well, since they also are building out a network of constant surveillance, connecting all of their devices. And then you've got FISA, which isn't just spying on foreigners. It can then spy on anybody the foreigners talk to. And there's several degrees of separation, which is how they, you know, got warrants to spy on everybody in the Trump administration circle, because really a couple degrees of separation is enough to more or less connect everybody on earth to each other. And that's all that's necessary to, you know, fulfill the magic word checkboxes of FISA to say, oh, but this is totally legitimate when we do it. It's obviously not. And then you've got what they're trying to add on to this, which already exists, but they're just trying to sort of create the legal framework through which this information and data can be weaponized and used legally. Clip 20 here. Federal law says new cars must monitor drivers and shut down the car if it disapproves of your behavior or state of mind, or I guess language that you use. I mean, who knows? Once they have this power, they'll be able to use it for whatever the hell they want. I won't go to this whole video, but we'll watch at least a portion of it. Clip 20.
It is now in order to consider amendment number 1, printed in Part B of House Report 119-462. For what purpose does the gentleman from Kentucky seek recognition?
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment at the desk.
The clerk shall designate the amendment.
Amendment number 1, printed in Part B of House Report number 119-462, offered by Mr. Massey of Kentucky.
Pursuant to House Resolution 1014, the gentleman from Kentucky, Mr. Massey, and a member opposed, each will control 5 minutes. The chair recognizes the gentleman from Kentucky.
Mr. Chair, I rise in support of our amendment. This is co-sponsored by Mr. Perry from Pennsylvania and Mr. Roy from Texas. And I regret that we have to offer this amendment. What I'm going to describe will probably sound like a bad science fiction movie, but that's what's written into law. Right now in law, that's going to be implemented for 2026 and beyond. Now, the reality is the technology doesn't exist, but that doesn't keep legislators from imagining things that they would like to do to infringe on civil liberties. But there is a law that states that every vehicle manufactured is going to have a kill switch in it. The car itself will monitor your driving. And if the car thinks that you're not doing a good job driving, it will disable itself. So the car dashboard becomes your judge, your jury, and your executioner. Imagine this. We got a snowstorm coming. A mom takes her kids out. They're going to the grocery store. It's snowing.
He goes on
to
lay out just one of like innumerable potential instances where this could be not even abused, but just inaccurately applied. And of course, the question is, like, who do you appeal to when your car on its own volition decides that you can't drive? And what if you're in an emergency? You know, what if there's a reason that you're doing what you're doing? I mean, when my second child was born, and this is one of my greatest accomplishments in my entire life, I made a 45-minute trip in 12 minutes during rush hour traffic in Austin. It was amazing. And I was breaking every possible law you can imagine. But I had a baby arriving, and she popped out about 2 minutes after we got to the hospital. So it was a good thing I did. But if I was in a car with one of these, would it allow me to do that? Would it allow me to drive on the wrong side of the road and run through red lights and drive on the sidewalk once or twice? Because I had to do that and it was worth it. But would a robotic car understand that? Would it allow me to do that? Would I have to appeal to it? Would I have to reason with it? Or would it just shut me down completely? And could that cause life-threatening problems for my wife? Like, there's a lot of instances in life where, you know, traffic laws are a barrier to safety. And as human beings, we can recognize that and circumvent it, right? I'm sure if I got pulled over going, you know, 80 in a 35, but my wife is like hyperventilating, I'm sure the cop would go, oh, okay, I get it, and drive me to the hospital and not, you know, arrest me for a felony speeding ticket, because we're human beings and we understand that sort of stuff. Are you going to program that into a robot? And if so, why program it at all? Because if you can just, you know, override all of the safety features by just saying, oh, but I'm taking a baby to be delivered, and then it overwrite, like, it's not functional. It's not good. And by the way, I don't know if we've run through this logic recently before, but just do you understand what the plan is for travel into the future? Because they've sort of had to back off on their electric car mandate, but that's going to come roaring back. And they're already doing it. Like, car companies have already decided they're going electric. They've stopped creating internal combustion engines, so it's happening. But we don't have energy production capable of keeping up with the energy that exists now, let alone if every single car on the road had to be powered from a central source rather than a gasoline engine. So we don't have the power to power every car being electric, but they're going to make every car be electric. Well, all that means is that you're not going to own a car, because not everybody can own a car because the grid can't handle it. So instead, there will be cars. There will be 100,000 cars in America, and you'll get to rent one on a per-use basis, but you'll never be able to own it. And if they don't like what you say on the internet, then you'll probably never get access to one in the first place. And that's the world they're trying to create. And it's mathematically impossible for it to be any other situation, because we do not have the ability to power every car being electric, but they're forcing us to make every car electric on purpose, because they want to control where you can go and where you can't go. Just like on January 6th, Google Maps and Apple Maps wouldn't give directions to Washington, D.C., or just like during the ICE protest in L.A., Waymo cars and other driverless taxis wouldn't drive people downtown where the protests were. Well, if protest is a key part of our participation in our government as citizens, what happens when the big tech companies decide, we don't want you protesting, we're not taking you there? What are you going to do, walk? How many people are going to gather for a big protest if the cars won't fly them there, or the cars won't drive them there, can't get directions there, the air transportation company won't fly you there? Because they're not just going to have access to your, you know, what's happening on the car. They're going to have access to everything you talk about on your phone. So if they just know that you're planning to go somewhere for a protest, you know, they can shut you down that way. And you don't have to publicly post about it. You text your friend, hey, you going to the protest? Can you give me a ride? Now they know. And if they don't want you protesting, they can shut it down. And they'll do it privately, so you won't even have an ability to, you know, claim a violation of an amendment because, well, it's a private company doing it and they have a right. So that's the world they're creating for us. And just so you know, most of this stuff, if not all of it, is already in place, maybe not utilized to the maximum degree that it could be, but we already have surveillance absolutely everywhere. We already have the AI systems to comb through it and find, you know, whatever we're looking for. We've got the shot spotters and the flock systems and the ring camera systems and the NSA and the FISA court. I mean, we have all of this stuff. And so the question is, why are all of our cities completely dominated by criminals? That's the real question you should be asking. Why are they building all of this stuff if it's not to protect the American people from exploitation or abuse from criminals? As Rand Paul puts it, the Fourth Amendment is not optional. If the government wants to read my messages, search your data, or spy on you, they need a warrant, period. My Fourth Amendment Restoration and Protection Act ends warrantless surveillance of Americans. I would say we need a new Internet Bill of Rights that could point out and make illegal some of the practices of the government. But we already have most of this stuff, if not all of it. And if they really wanted to do it for our benefit, they would be able to show us places and instances where these things have already successfully saved people. Right? They'd be able to go, hey, you might not like the flock cameras, but guess what? There's 10,000 criminals sitting behind bars thanks to those flock cameras. So isn't it kind of a decent trade-off? But they don't do that. Because they're not even interested in, like, getting you to go along with your own enslavement. They are beyond that at this point. They're just doing it to you. And they're not even trying to make it sound like it's a positive for you. Because at that same time, should we just take a look? Should we take a little tour around the country? Let's go to clip 42 here. This is Seattle, which is supposed to host World Cup soccer games in June. See what Seattle, premier city in America, looks like these days. Let's watch.
Good grief. Oh, my God. Look at this horde. Black market of stolen goods. Unbelievable. It's a total disaster.
Hey, is that okay?
And this guy goes on and on. He walks around. I mean, it's literally just the streets of Seattle are just open air refugee camps with criminals and drug addicts and abusers and dogs. And it's just... this is America in 2026. Despite all the technology in the world, the most prosperous country in the world, we're spending $20 billion a year on Israel. We're spending $100 billion on Ukraine, $100 billion on Iran. We're building hundreds of billions of dollars worth of data centers all over the country. And our streets look like hell. And they are just replete with criminality. But that's Seattle. They're the left coast. They're expected to be like that. Let's go to clip 41. This is North Carolina last night. There you go. A bunch of, shall we call them teenagers, took over a highway and started setting off youths. Yes, they're youths. Goons. Some people call them goons. And they're starting fires and lighting off fireworks and just blocking a major highway. So, gosh, if only we had more flock cameras, that would deal with this, right? Gee, if only the NSA could read my private messages, then we'd be protected from this rampant criminality, right? Or is all of that going to continue as they build out the high technology to enslave us even further?
Right now is the time to support InfoWars as Twilight. We are shutting down next Thursday night. The InfoWar continues for all of you. The AlexJonesStore.com is not owned by me. It's owned by Bigley. It owns the Alex Jones Network. They won't be able to shut us down. We have fought them, and we will continue on. But I need your support. The supplements, the methylene blue, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, it is all incredible, top-rated, so good for you. You're insane if you don't get it. And we're running a fundraiser here. All the original InfoWars products, we're not going to sell once this goes through. Because even though we're battling in court, they could come back and say we violated their whatever. So if you want to get original InfoWars gear and the new update, the 1776 line, now is the time. Also, they're running mega sales every day for the next week at Bigley. If you subscribe to any supplement, you can lock it in for 50% off when you buy it into the future. Cancel anytime with one click. Sign up for any supplement subscription. You get 50% off plus a free bottle of either Ultimate Chill or Ultimate Energy Incredible Formulas. Ultimate Chill helps support calm, balance, and focus. Ultimate Energy helps support energy, drive, and mental intensity. Third deal on top of it. Every order gets a free mystery gift with purchase. Biggest sales ever. We want to hire more hosts. We want to expand once this is over. We want to go at least 5 a.m. to midnight every night. We've got big plans, okay? We fought all the way. We rode it till the wheels came off. We're going all the way. We're still going to block the onion scammers that got exposed a year and a half ago. They're trying it again. We're going to sue the living hell out of them. Wait till after our guest leaves us. We found incredible information on them. It is so shocking. It's going to just blow you away. Guess what they're into? I don't think you'll be surprised, but it's so bad. You're not going to. I mean, it is the sickest stuff you've ever seen. Out and out Satanism, torturing, murdering children. They love it. They're promoting it. Wait till you see this with Will Ferrell, everything. It's all coming up. But I will continue to fight these people 110%. I love it. I'm built to do it. But I cannot do it without your backing and support. So make the decision now, especially the 99% of you, have millions of viewers a day, that never go to theoliveshowstore.com to get these incredible items, incredible knives, silver coins, collectibles. It's all there. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And it's a free app. TheAlexJonesApp.com. Android, on Apple, it's all there. It's free. Get it. The show's right there in the center of it. And you get big discounts on the shopping cart when you do it through the app. AlexJonesApp.com. And soon we'll announce the new news site that's even better than InfoWars. It's all coming up. But I can't do it without you. You get all the credit. I need your support now. Firing the bat signal. I want to thank you all for your past support. But those that haven't supported, what are you doing? TheAlexJonesStore.com. Stay with us. I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra Methylene Blue.
I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. I mean, this is just bonker town. I just can't shut up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. I just can't shut up about it.
Stuff works.
Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Keep your hand on your gun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Don't last segment anyone. Of the War Room broadcast today on this Monday. Keep your hand on your gun. The fourth to last episode of War Room from these studios. We will be broadcasting on Friday out of different studios, but Thursday will be our last day here, and we're certainly going to miss the studios, but the studios are not what brought us our success. It's you fine folks out there, and as long as you come along with us, then whether we're here or there or anywhere, we will succeed and we will dominate. We will continue to change the paradigm the world over. So thank you for your support so far. Thank you for keeping up with us, and through all this mess, it's not our fault. Trust us, we wish we weren't having to go through this as well, but it's just the way it is. And like the rebels from Star Wars, where we got to make a new base now because we've been discovered and basically destroyed. But we make it very easy for you to support us no matter what happens with InfoWars. TheAlexJonesStore.com is the way that you support us. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison is how you support me on top of all of it. We have amazing discounts for you. In fact, the biggest discounts in the history of our store. The best mega sale in InfoWars history. This is the last week to enter to win both the Ford Raptor and the custom H1 Hummer, plus $20,000 in cash. Every dollar you spend gets you 100 orders. thealexjonesstore.com. Plus, you get free $10 discount on whatever you order. That'll apply at checkout. You get an extra $10 if you're a VIP member, of course. VIP members get extra discounts as well. You also get a free InfoWars dog tag, everybody. You don't have to be a VIP member, but if you spend $100 on thealexjonesstore.com, you get a free dog tag InfoWars branded product. And of course, the InfoWars product fundraiser is on, with April 30th being your last chance to get official InfoWars products. You're going to want to go now. You're getting 20% off everything with the InfoWars logo on it. We will have to stop selling anything with the logo on it. So go now to thealexjonesstore.com, get your InfoWars products, and be entered to win a truck, get massive discounts, and fuel up our escape pod for launch later this week. TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. Now let's talk about the Middle East and Iran. Basically, the latest with Iran is that they have essentially won the war and are now looking to negotiate everything except for the thing that we predicated the war on. That is, Iran offers deal to reopen Strait of Hormuz, but first, hold nuclear program talks second. So open the Strait of Hormuz first, hold nuclear program talks second. So the whole reason we went to war ostensibly was to stop their nuclear program. Now it's to open the Strait of Hormuz, which was open already before the war, and they're saying they will open the strait, but they're not going to discuss nuclear anything until they settle that. So they have all of the leverage. That being said, we know how the war in Iran plays into much larger, grander, global operations. I don't think it's going to slow down anytime soon. If I had to guess, I would say we're probably looking for another major round of combat in Iran fairly shortly. I don't think these talks are going to go anywhere. The only other option would be like Trump just kind of moves on. Like maybe we just like go to war with Cuba and the whole Iran thing kind of like falls to the wayside and it just like quietly gets settled a couple months from now. That's kind of how it feels at this point. I mean, we're like 60 days into the war with Iran and it's like not even really making headlines anymore. It's just kind of like to the side, kind of like, yeah, we're negotiating. We'll figure it out. Don't worry about it. Of course, it's the devastating consequences of no fertilizer. I mean, this is a big deal. It's going to destroy the planet if we let it, but I think they're just embarrassed and kind of like trying not to draw too much attention to it right now, which is fine because there's a lot of other stuff to pay attention to, and it's all humiliating for Donald Trump. So it's not like you're getting a respite. If we talk about Lebanon, you've got Trump being humiliated because he demanded a ceasefire and Israel is ignoring him. You want to talk about the West Bank? Guess what? Israel's ignoring Trump and humiliating him. So it's sort of the same across the board, no matter what you want to talk about. When it comes to the Middle East or foreign policy, the one constant is Trump being humiliated. So I'd rather him just be humiliated and we get out of the Middle East. Like, you know, humiliate him to such a degree that, like, we throw up our hands and get out of the Middle East and let Israel be destroyed by Iran. That would be, like, the ideal outcome out of all of this. But regardless, and this is one of those things, you know, you, like I was saying the other day, you wake up in the morning and every day I see certain things. I'm going to see insane gang rapists in Europe being given bare minimum, if any, punishment by the authorities. Today, the big story was in Austria, a gang of guys who raped a 12-year-old girl, literally no jail, no community service. They were instructed to go to a class where they learn how not to rape. And that's their punishment for the brutal rape of a preteen girl who they, you know, kidnapped and probably ruined her life. But that's fine. They don't go to jail. They don't even get nothing. Just nothing. Just you get one, I guess. I guess every you know, one of the 64 million Muslim migrants into Europe, you know, you can rape as many girls as you want until you get caught. And then you got to kind of slow yourself down a little bit. So that's one constant. Another constant is gangs of black youth in America just committing open crimes right out in front of everybody. Some of the videos I just showed you is just a constant, or just like, you know, randomly murdering somebody and also getting away with it. Like, again, this is happening here in America too, where earlier this week or last week, I believe it was, there's a young black man who just was, I guess he was having a bad day and decided to take it out on a random white guy. there's a random like 80-year-old white man walking down the street. Black guy just decides to run up, body slam him as hard as he can, slam his head into the concrete. Old man dies. Young man, no jail. No jail. You can just murder white people as a black person. And hey, as long as you say I was having a bad day, they go, oh, well, that's understandable. You just had to murder somebody to improve your mood. Goodbye. And they just let you go. It's literally happening here in America. And it's every day. So every day, there are these certain constants. Muslims taking over and destroying Europe blatantly in front of everybody. Black people in America committing crimes and getting away with it. Totally fine. Illegal immigrants in America violating young women or murdering somebody. It's just like every day you see more of these. And correspondent with these, like in addition to these and sort of parallel with these, are all the stories of the people allowing it to happen. The judges letting the people out or the migrant caravans arriving en masse or, you know, Israel working with Morocco to take Spain back over for the Muslims, which they are literally doing, which is crazy. But yes, Spain basically said, we don't like that you're committing genocide all over the place. And so now Israel is working with Morocco to recapture northern Moroccan territories, which is kind of funny because if you read about the takeover of the Spanish Peninsula by the Moors back in the day, they also had some help in opening the gates of places like Toledo. So it's kind of a historical throwback a little bit. Now I've got stories from official, newspapers discussing that. So again, save your outrage for the people that deserve it. So all this is to say that the other thing I see every single day, and again, in alignment with statements, right? Like every day there will be a statement of somebody like an American government, you know, just talking about how Israel is our greatest friend and we have to do everything for them and anybody who's speaking against them should be arrested and put in jail. And then simultaneously you have like dozens of videos of Israelis just being the worst all over the place and in any variety of ways. Like you've got the settlers who are like taking over houses in Lebanon. You've got the soldiers who are looting houses in Lebanon. You've got the bombing campaigns that are still just destroying huge swaths of Lebanon, just completely leveling Christian towns all over the place. Then you've got the West Bank settlers who are just a constant source of the most insane terroristic activity you could ever imagine, as well as the Israelis who are settling the Golan Heights and doing similar activities there, as well as the ongoing genocide in Gaza, which hasn't really slowed down that much, in addition to, you know, obviously the war in Iran and the, you know, control they have here in America and the way that they're like bringing in the Muslims to Europe and like all this other fun stuff. So it's just like a constant. So it's just every day you wake up and it's just white people under attack. And in a word, and unifying all of these things is that white people are under attack from every different angle, relentlessly. And obviously, in addition to all of this, you have the videos of white people who think it's fine and who justify it and who go along with it and who think we deserve it. It's totally insane. And it's not going to end. It's not going to end unless you end it. And this is the ultimate revelation here is there is no point appealing to, you know, humanity. There's no point in pointing out hypocrisy. They don't care. They could not care less. Until you actually physically stop them, they're just going to keep going forever until everybody's a slave or dead. That's it. Okay? It's up to us. Couldn't be more obvious. And again, the humiliation on top of all of it really should be something that we're ashamed of. Let's go to clip 14 here. This is from The Economist, and this is just a little rundown of just some of the stuff that the West Bank terrorists and the IDF have been up to in Gaza and the West Bank and Lebanon and everywhere. Let's watch.
While the world's eyes are on Iran, Israeli settlers are annexing new areas in the occupied West Bank. Violence has escalated, including arson attacks on Palestinian homes and vehicles. In March 2026, the number of Palestinians reportedly killed by settlers reached its highest in a decade. This campaign of violence aims to evict Palestinians from their homes. Israeli settlements in the West Bank are illegal under international law. But in a single day in March 2026, the Israeli government approved over 30 outposts. Most regular units in the Israel Defense Forces are currently deployed in Gaza and Lebanon. That means security in the West Bank is now the responsibility of the Israeli police and the IDF's regional defense battalions. Many of those soldiers are settlers themselves. A recent UN report highlighted the worsening crisis.
Israeli security forces have continued to kill Palestinians with impunity.
On April 21st, a reservist in the IDF killed two Palestinians outside a school. Settlers aren't just becoming more violent. They are also systematically annexing more territory. After the Oslo Accords in 1993, the West Bank was divided into three areas. These are controlled by the Palestinian Authority. Others are under joint Palestinian civil and Israeli security control. The rest is fully administered by Israel. After the Hamas attack from Gaza in October 2023, settlers embarked on a campaign of intimidation against Palestinians in remote rural areas. Since the start of the war with Iran, there have been more organized, repeated attacks on larger communities. Settlers are growing more confident because of tacit or explicit support from Israel's government. The finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, is a settler and has called on Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to take over the West Bank.
Maximum shetach al minimum ukhlusiya.
2 days later, President Donald Trump issued a rare rebuke.
I will not allow Israel to annex the West Bank.
But on the ground, a form of annexation is already underway. And with the world's attention on Iran, violence in the West Bank is likely to intensify.
That was from The Economist. So again, it's relentless and daily and brutal and horrific. And of course, you know, West Bank has nothing to do with Hamas. Hamas doesn't control the West Bank. That was Gaza. West Bank is under a completely different authority. The West Bank, of course, also where Bethlehem and all of these Christian communities are. So it's, you know, it's not like this is Hamas, and it's not like these are even, you know, radical Muslims that they're going after. It's Christians who are being targeted for total destruction, as they are in Lebanon. And again, it's literally every... I didn't even grab all the videos from today that I could have. There's another one where it's like... And it's kind of weird because y'all remember that video that went viral, and it's a black guy looking through the window and his eyes are all crazy looking. It was from the UK. And it just went totally viral for obvious reasons. And it's like almost an exactly the same video is made, but it's an Israeli settler like trying to get through. I didn't even bring that one in. But we can go to some other ones I found here. Let's go to clip nine here. This is Israeli settlers alongside Israeli forces uprooting more olive trees since this morning. So this is them in the middle of the night just going through and tearing down olive trees that have been there in some cases for centuries. And because obviously those trees are terrorists. Well, the trees feed terrorists, so they're basically terrorists themselves. You know, babies grow up to be terrorists, so of course babies can be terrorists, and trees can feed terrorists, which makes them terror trees. And the land, obviously, can hold terrorists, so you have to take that over. And people that get attacked often, you know, feel the need to defend themselves, i.e. become terrorists. So, you know, anybody defending themselves has to be destroyed as well. And that's just one of them. We can go to clip 10 here. This is also from today. Large groups of Israeli settlers once again attacking the village of Jalud, where again you just see mobs, hordes of Israeli settlers. There's like an infinite number of these guys. They just spawn like goblins in a video game, and there's just like thousands of them everywhere, and they're constantly spilling over the borders and attacking people. And if anybody in Palestine tries to resist, then their whole family dies, or they get arrested and raped to death by a dog, and then hung by Bezalel Smotrich. So again, I cannot emphasize how utterly despicable and evil Israel is, and why we're going along with it, and why we're going along with it in a way that is particularly humiliating to Donald Trump. Let's go to clip 8 here, more about Israel Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich, who, by the way, is a terrorist. look up his past. He's like a literal terrorist. But then again, so is literally everybody who's ever been in charge of Israel. So I guess that's not all that confusing. Let's go to clip 8.
There was this interview with the Jerusalem Post where the finance minister Smotrich, which has been talked about a lot in the program, a member of Israel's far right party, claimed that the settlement expansion in the West Bank is actually being carried out with basically unconditional U.S. support. So in the past, at least publicly and supposedly privately, the U.S. has advocated for restraint in expanding these settlements, where we are like, you shouldn't do that. And if you do, there might be consequences. And then inevitably they get spread and we do absolutely nothing about it. But at least we've out like a good statement or something. That appears to not be the case anymore. Now, Trump is not publicly saying that it's okay to do this, but Smotrich is apparently optimistic and enthusiastic that there is actual alignment between the United States and Israeli government on this. So here are some things that he said in his interview. He said that all actions taken in the West Bank have been coordinated with the president, along with U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio and U.S. Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee. He noted that while Trump has not yet supported the application of Israeli sovereignty over all parts of the West Bank, he hoped that, quote, we will also succeed in that. And even in the previous U.S. administration, we did things, but certainly in the current one, we received great support, full backing. And yeah, I'm glad that he acknowledges that this sort of thing was also going on under Joe Biden. And
he's like, Rubio's down with it, Huckabee's down with it, and Trump himself signed off on all of this, which is, again, insane. Let's just play the video again. Clip number 3 here. This was Trump in September of last year being asked about this exact topic. Let's watch.
Did you promise leaders this week that you would not allow Israel to annex the West Bank? Is that something that you said?
I will not allow Israel to annex the West Bank. Nope, I will not allow it. It's not going to happen.
Did you speak with Netanyahu about this directly?
Yeah, but I'm not going to allow it. Whether I spoke to him or not, I did. But I'm not allowing Israel to annex the West Bank. There's been enough. It's time to stop now, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, that's Trump looking like a weak bitch right there. Really pathetic. I mean, honestly, what? So the president of the United States, no uncertain words, no waffling, no, well, we'll see, no, it's a complicated thing. Israel is not annexing the West Bank. It's too much. They're done. Fast forward 6 months. They're literally laughing in your face, spitting at you, and saying, Trump said we could do this, as they just ruthlessly kill and conquer the West Bank, making Trump look like a complete chump, making him look like an absolute moron, idiot, weak scum, who's incapable of upholding even the most easily upheld thing you could imagine. I mean, it would be... So I could think of 1,000 different ways to stop this from happening. Like, it's ridiculous. For one thing, they need us to survive. How about that? How about if they keep annexing the West Bank, we cut them off and then they all die, or they stop annexing the West Bank? That would be a bit of leverage we could probably use. What if we put American soldiers on the ground in the West Bank to protect the Palestinians? What if we did that? I think we could do that. I think we have bases all over the world. I think, we act on this stuff all the time. It's just not when it's Jews doing it, because then it's good. Now, this is Lebanon. This is them bombing Lebanon during the ceasefire. This is Israel's adherence to the Lebanese ceasefire that, once again, Trump explicitly told them not to do. Do not bomb Lebanon. I said no. I told them you're not bombing Lebanon. This is what they're doing in Lebanon, folks. And they're getting away with it, and Trump's doing nothing to stop them, nothing to hold them back, nothing to even make them ask, think twice about it. And these are not the same village, by the way. These are all different villages in Lebanon being utterly and completely destroyed by Israel, even though a lot of them have Christian communities there. And again, the nitpicking people have. I posted something saying, here's a here's an image of, you know, the before and after of a Lebanese Christian village. And before there's buildings, after there's rubble. And I had a bunch of people comment being like, that city is 75% Muslim, 25% Christian. Okay, do you know how the Middle East works? There are neighborhoods that are entirely one religion and neighborhoods that are entirely the other. So when you see a city with 25% Christian, that 25% Christian is usually in one distinct neighborhood with a church, and that's the neighborhood that's been destroyed because they're targeting Christians because they hate Christians more than they hate Muslims. Do you understand that? Everybody who's been there says it. Let's go to clip number four here. This is Al Jazeera confirming that Israel is just obviously flagrantly breaking every U.S. ceasefire that they're supposed to adhere to. Let's watch.
Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip intensified over the past week, overwhelming hospitals and grieving families. A U.S.-brokered ceasefire in October 2025 continues to be violated by Israel. Al Jazeera's Hind Khoury has more from Gaza.
In Khan Yunis, a drone strike killed 23-year-old Yahya and injured three others. Hours later, a separate Israeli attack killed three civil defense workers while they were traveling in a car along Salah al-Din Road. These incidents come amid the fragile ceasefire that has been in place since October. Despite the agreement, violence has persisted, with hundreds of people reportedly killed in the months since it began. And in the past week, attacks have been growing more intense. Hospitals are running out of basic supplies, making it increasingly difficult for them to treat the wounded. And medical teams on the ground say conditions are deteriorating, warning that Gaza's health system cannot withstand another wave of attacks.
So whether it's Gaza or Lebanon or Iran or the West Bank or the Golan Heights in Syria, everywhere and ubiquitously, yeah, there it is, the Christian village of Yarun in southern Lebanon before and after it was destroyed by the Israeli army. And there you can see right in the middle, there's a big church. That's the big church that's been destroyed, reduced utterly to rubble. So, yeah, and look, top... the Christian village, Google exists, man. Oh, demographics, oh, they're 75% Muslim and only 24% Christian, huh? And you think they're, what, equally spread out? And what, because Christians live with Muslims, they also deserve to die? Like, what do you think you're pointing out here? No, what I'm pointing out is that Israel is murdering everybody. They murdered 50 people in Lebanon today. There's no legitimate military targets in any of these places. It's just murder. It's just Israel murdering everybody and laughing at Trump's face as he goes along with all of it. So, screw them.
If you suffer from low energy, if you're not feeling the energy that you used to feel in your younger years, you should try this product and see if it makes a difference for you, because there are many causes of lack of energy, but one of them can be a lack of cellular energy support through pre-methylated nutritional supplements like this that can help you. You can go buy a bottle of vitamins at any store, you know, any Walmart, anywhere that's got cheap B12, which is cyanocobalamin, or the cheap B vitamins, or the cheap minerals like calcium carbonate, which is ground up limestone, you know. Alex Jones doesn't use the cheap low-end versions of these products. And I know this as a nutritionist, as a food scientist. I look at Alex's labels and I'm like, yes, these are the high-end ingredients that I would be using in my own formulations. You may not know that the vitamin B12 that's in that formula, which is methylcobalamin, you may not know this, but that ingredient alone is crazy expensive. I think the last time I looked at the pricing of vitamin B12, it was something like $10,000 per kilogram. I mean, it's insanely expensive. And so the fact that you can get a bottle of this for, what is it, like $22 on the alexjonesstore.com, it's unbelievable. I don't know how they're able to get to these prices. They've also got TMG in there. They've got CoQ10 in there. They've got vitamin B6 and so on. Also another form of folate in the same formula. The Ultra Methylene Red, and it's sweetened by stevia. So stevia, which is great. It's a natural leaf, you know, sweet leaf sweetener. So really, I'm always impressed with what the Alex Jones Store is doing with their product line. So check it out. TheAlexJonesStore.com, Ultra Methylene Red.
We'll be right back.
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.